The thing with other cities, back to your point, is there's a ceiling in every city except for LA and New York, if you're going to do theater in New York. But I always get a little frustrated by the media that comes out, and it seems to me it always sort of falls back into Christians making movies for Christians, whether they mean to or not.
Right.
What we call it in our office, a Christian high five, when it's like, who cares if old ladies who love the movie in their Bible study? It's right. Like, we're not reaching anybody we need to be reaching.
Welcome to the Social Media Church Podcast. I'm Neil Smith, and I'm joined by my co-host, Nick Runyon. And we also have a special co-host, Chad Huggins, with us today. Chad, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Now, we have an exciting, we're at NRB, and we have an exciting guest, Phil Cook. Phil is a hero, a longtime hero of mine, and become a friend as well recently. And Phil, I remember when we met, I asked you what you do, and you said, I help Christians not suck at media. Can you expand on that a little bit?
Well, I can tell you,
what it is that you do.
It keeps me very busy. There's a lot of work to be done. I think most people listening who have seen Christian radio or heard Christian radio or seen Christian TV or Christian movies know that I'll be busy for the rest of my life with a job, with a brand like that. No question.
Yeah. So how do Christians suck at media? So
a lot of ways. It's interesting ways. Mostly, though, it's about focus. They get so focused on the message, they forget about the package that the message goes in. You know, you see it in movies especially. They forget that they're ultimately telling a story. Here's the deal. If you want to make a Christian movie, make a compelling movie first. Yeah. Make sure the story works and people are captivated by it before you start thinking about how we force in this Christian message.
Yep.
If it's not organic and it doesn't work in the flow of the story, it's not going to make the movie go. And so too often we get so focused on the message, we forget that the package that message is delivered in is so, so critically important.
Yeah, that's awesome.
In fact, I'll tell you this. Wall Street Journal about a year ago came up with a study that indicated when you meet somebody for the first time, you decide what you think of that person in the first 4 to 8 seconds. Now, you haven't had a chance to talk to them or get to know them very well, but we're so distracted, pulled in so many directions, we've just changed our behavior that we start making judgments immediately, which means I'm not going to wait to get way into your movie. I'm going to start making choices right away. I tell pastors, I'm glad your sermon is great. I'm glad your worship is anointed. But who's the first person somebody meets when they walk in the door? You know, what does your lobby look like? Because that's when they start making decisions. So Christians just need to understand in any media they create, you've got to open the door to get people to engage. And that's just really critical.
Yeah. So and then maybe more specifically with social media.
Oh,
are there any specific opportunities or things that you see or maybe even just immediate opportunities for improvement in the world of social media?
If I see a pastor post, today's the day the Lord hath made. Let us rejoice and be glad in him. I will hunt him down and kill him. You know, it's not about don't post scripture. It's just that we do the same old shtick over and over. Over and over again. And I think social media, we just forget that social media is social. It's designed to be for people to engage with you. I've had so many leaders that I've met who will post something and then walk away. They don't go back and engage with the people that have posted. Well, I had a pastor in South Carolina. You won't believe this. He'll get up. He's got the most amazing social media following. He'll literally get up on a Saturday morning and say, man, I'm in the mood for biscuits and gravy. And he'll get 150 responses. I mean, boy, Pastor, I love biscuits gravy. That's awesome. I love it. And he never thought about going back and talking to those people. And I said, hey, just go back and engage a few of them. You don't have to talk to everybody, but engage with them. And he started doing it. And this gal said, oh my gosh, my pastor talks to me on social media. This is the most awesome church I've ever been to. Yeah. People are thrilled that you engage with them. So Christians don't do a good job of understanding that social element of social media. It seems strange, but they don't.
Yeah, I love that. Well, you posted recently a blog post that caught my attention about creatives and creatives in the church. And obviously, creative is at the core of media. Where are churches missing it when it comes to creatives? And maybe even where are pastors and ministry leaders missing it when it comes to leading creatives?
I am really big on that leading creatives thing right now because what happens is, you know, churches finally have gotten to the place where they understand we need designers. We need social media people. We need video guys. We need the whole, you know, complement of creative people. However, you don't learn how to lead creatives in seminary. You don't learn learn how to lead it in business school or any other college degree. And so it's a real art form. And the truth is, creative people behave and act and think differently than other people. Mm-hmm. Does it make them weird? And most pastors think, you know, okay, if I have to lead creatives, that's such a drag because they're just a bunch of oddballs. Well, they're not. It's not about herding cats. It's about herding tigers. I mean, I look at it that way because creative people are a force to be dealt with. And if you can learn to get into that flow and help them achieve their potential. And some of the quick ways are most leaders don't defend their creative people's work. If you're going to lead creatives, you've got to be willing to defend their work to the death. I mean, whoever's your boss, if you bail on them, they will never forget that. And they shouldn't, because that's no leader at all. And so I think there's just some simple techniques like that, that once you start to understand, creative people are amazing and they will do remarkable work. And so, and the other extreme is leaders who will, you know, claim credit for the work their creative team does. That's the worst. You know, let them have a little glory. Let them enjoy the success they're doing. When you step in and start claiming credit for what other people did as a leader, that's just, that team is just going
to
crash.
Yeah. So how practically can you do that? What are some practical steps to defending or both defending and really enhance or communicating the
First of all, make sure they understand the vision. If it's a church, if it's a ministry, if it's nonprofit, even a business, make sure they understand the vision. For instance, so many leaders think, oh, they're creatives, they're not going to get the strategy, they don't understand the business part. Mm-hmm. Guess what? They do. You know, creatives are not idiots. Mm-hmm. They get it. So first of all, I want to sit down with them and share where we're trying to go, what the vision of all this is, where the pastor feels called to lead the church or the nonprofit feels called to go. Share that with them. That's incredibly important, because if you start withholding information, they're never going to achieve what their potential is. So, the first step is to share everything. Make sure those channels of communication are open. Let them come to you and they don't understand. Yep. Give them a chance to ask questions. I met a leader the other day that is such a micromanager. When his creative team comes in the room for a meeting, he tells them all where to sit. I mean, they stand there literally until he tells them where to sit. That's a huge, huge problem. So the issue is, you can't micromanage creatives. You need to let them loose. Let them give them space. Now, that doesn't mean you don't have deadlines. I mean, I think creative people love deadlines. I mean, I like deadlines because I love the noise they make when they go by me at 90 miles an hour. Creatives want to push. They will push the deadline. I don't even start thinking about doing a project till I see the deadline coming in the distance. But they thrive on deadlines because they need to know the playing field. So little simple things like that can make a huge difference.
We talked, spent some time talking with Katie Allred.
Yeah.
Do you know Katie?
Mm-hmm.
So Church Communications group on Facebook, 15,000 people.
It's amazing.
And she does a great job curating that group. And what we see in there is sometimes people, there's like about once a month, you'll have somebody post a thing. And it's a rant. It's like, oh, my pastor made me do this. What are you doing that? Now speak to the creative. So you said a little bit.
All right, creative folks. First of all, we have your back. We love you. You do great work. There's no question that it's a business. There is a business aspect to this. So being a creative doesn't mean you're signing up to just let your vision be fulfilled and just create whatever you want. There's no question that A, there are limits around creativity. What's the brilliant ad man in New York City who said, it's not creative unless it sells. And so it's got to work. We're not hiring you to sit on your back porch and to create whatever you want. We're hiring you to accomplish a goal. So I think for creatives to understand that is absolutely critical. And obviously there will be times when a pastor, being a pastor, just wants to have something a certain way. And my thing is, just be careful picking the battles you're willing to fight. It's not going to destroy your reputation to create a social media image that the pastor really loves and that you don't think is so great. Don't fight over that. Fight over the important battles. I think that's far, far more important. And the other thing I would just say is, just understand the past. See it through the pastor's eyes. Sometimes we don't do that. I even encourage my creative teams to go up on the pulpit and look at the congregation the way he sees it. Think of what he sees it and the pressures he's under and what he's going through. And then they start to realize, okay, I'll give him a little slack in this area or that area. And then you find this equilibrium that really works.
Yeah. So if you are that creative and you're feeling, though, your pastor just isn't going to budge, that, they're never going to value you, is it time to look for another job?
I'm a big believer in that. I know creatives who have worked for 15 to 20 years at a church who are absolutely miserable. Mm. And they've never achieved their vision. I know a video producer that pastor hired him because he wanted to go on television and have a TV ministry. Great. Well, the years went by, and the pastor said, well, I think next year. Let's get some equipment. Maybe next year we'll do it. Well, the next year came along. I think next year we'll do it. Lo and behold, 14 years later, he wasn't on television. And this guy just wasted 14 years of his life and his creative ability. Yep. So I do think we get... I got fired when I was 36, and I read something recently that the two most addictive substances in the world are heroin and a regular paycheck. And as creatives, we get lulled into that regular paycheck. Wow. And I think sometimes God stepped in my case to fire me because I needed to go to L.A. I knew I was supposed to. I was in Oklahoma. I knew I needed to go to L.A. And I was in a good church. My kids were in a good school. I had friends. I kept coming up with reasons why maybe God thought I could do it from Oklahoma, but he finally had to step in and fire me because there is a time you need to just move on.
Let's talk about LA, and we talk about tech little bit too. Yeah. So in technology, people are like, you've got Austin, you've got these tech hubs, but you got to be in Silicon Valley. It's kind of the line. Mm-hmm. Is the same thing true for media?
TV, film, absolutely true. Geography matters. Mm. And the reason being, sure, they're making movies everywhere. I was in a restaurant the other day, and I mentioned I was from LA, and I was here in Nashville. And some lady just went onto a rant about Nashville's the new Hollywood. You're an idiot. Why are you staying in L.A.? Everything's coming to Nashville. But the truth is films are made in Atlanta and Dallas and New Orleans, other places. However, the decisions are all made in L.A. Mm. And what I discovered living in Oklahoma was you need to be able to drive across town at a minute's notice and meet somebody for a meeting. Or you run into somebody on the studio lot. And so there's no question that if you want to be a serious player, now you could be a makeup artist or an assistant cameraman or somebody what we call below the line. You could live in some of these other cities because you'll just get picked up. But the writers, the directors, the producers, the main people involved in a movie all come from L.A. And certainly the decisions are made from L.A., which means you need to be in L.A. pitching that project if you want to get it made. So there's no question that geography does matter.
Interesting. And understanding this industry, so you're right in the middle of it, and then kind of coming back to the church and picking up a little bit.
Sure.
Should creatives practically, I'm hearing a difference of you talking about the regular paycheck, should be creatives be looking to move to contract roles and supporting in that way, or should churches be looking to move those roles to contract and not in-house designers, videographers?
Put it this way. Like, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm curious about that. I'm in a Facebook group with church filmmaking teams of various sizes, and I hear from a lot of them, and some of their pastors, like, lock it down.
Yeah.
It's like no passion projects.
Oh, really?
I'm curious what your take on it is that, because I'm always like, if you got a time and you want to make film, just make a film and then make whatever your pastor wants as well. But what would you say to that pastor or to that creative in that sort of position?
It's a great question. In my company, Cook Pictures in Burbank, I have an executive producer. I have an operations gal, and then I have my wife who works with our creative team, and that's it. That's full-time employees. Wow. Our shooters, our editors, our lighting directors, our whole crew, we've got great people scattered around the country, but obviously LA is a freelance town. The best people are freelance because they can afford to be. So I'm a big advocate of freelance. Why do I have to pay you if we go 3 weeks not shooting a project? But there are other places, other cities in America where it is good to have a team in place because it's harder to get freelance talent of a high caliber in certain markets. But as far as the other question about locking it down, I say let them fly. For me, you're honing your talent. Anytime you do a project, I actually taught a class at UCLA for a number of years that was about, while you're waiting for your dream project, here's all the ways you can make a living using your skill. You might be doing corporate videos or training videos or church videos or medical videos, whatever, commercials. There's a lot of ways. But each time you're developing your craft, you're working with actors, you're working with a camera, you're setting a scene. So I would encourage pastors to let your people do freelance stuff.
Yeah, I love that. Phil, I would love to hear your story maybe of how did you get into this space and how do you continue to hone your skill moving forward? Where are you learning right now?
I'm 63. I'll say that. I know I sound 27, but I'm 63. And honing your skill, Michelangelo had a great quote that was, I never stop learning. And that's so true. I mean, I have friends that do what I do and have done what I've done for their whole career who aren't working today. They're selling insurance or they're working at the mall because they weren't aware of what was coming and they didn't pay attention. I would say if you're a freelancer or a full-time person, the single most important thing you could do is get to conferences, get to seminars, read, stay up on top of what's going on. Surround yourself with people smarter than you. I went over to Jonathan Bock, who co-authored my new book with me the other day, and Jonathan is the biggest marketing firm that the studios go to reach Christian audiences. He's marketed 500 movies, all the major movies out there. And on the other side of the fire pit was Scott Derrickson, who just directed Doctor Strange for Marvel. On the other side is Ralph Winter, who did Wolverine, Planet of the Apes, Star Trek, X-Men, on and The Promise, on and on. And then Stu Hazeldine, who just finished directing The Shack, was the other guy. Yeah. And he just has written an incredible screenplay for John Milton's Paradise Lost that is blowing studios away right now. And so he may be up for something really significant. And so those guys are all more successful than me. But I'm not intimidated by that. It raises me up because I'm part of that conversation. So find people that are smarter than you and more successful than you and jump in there because it makes a difference. Mm-hmm.
Well, that's why I hang out with Nick.
There you go. I'm going to spend more time with you guys.
Welcome to it. Let's talk about your new book a little bit. So you've been pretty vocal about credibility in culture, Christians' credibility in culture. And your new book, The Way Back, is subtitled How Christians Blew Our Credibility and How Do We Get It Back?
Yeah.
So, like, the reason I love Chad, I love you, Chad.
Thank you.
Wow. And I love having Chad on our team. Whoa. So he spent some time out in L.A. He did the actor thing. He's super creative, also incredibly analytical. The listeners of the podcast, some of your interviews, by the way, Chad, are the highest listened social media.
Oh, really? Yeah. Wow. That's impressive.
Because it's
that supports my theory that creative people can be analytical, business-minded, strategic. That's good.
That's exactly right. And so, but you have an interesting insight as well for having worked out there for a while. It's like, I know this really grates on you as the excellence thing.
Yeah, and I think, like, as an actor, like, if anybody would ever, when coming out of college, is like, I'm just going to hang around in Dallas and get work here. It's like the thing with other cities, back to your point, is there's a ceiling in every city except for L.A. and New York if you're going to do theater in New York. But, I always get a little frustrated by the media that comes out, and it seems to me it always sort of falls back into Christians making movies for Christians, whether they mean to or not.
Right.
What we call it in our office, a Christian high five, when it's like, who cares if old ladies who love the movie in their Bible study? It's like, we're not reaching anybody we need to be reaching. And I said this at that thing we did for the students a couple days ago, but my favorite Christian movie of the last year and a half or so was The Conjuring 2, R-rated secular horror movie. But I had the best conversation with my non-Christian brother-in-law who wanted me to go see it, and it opened up a door for us to talk about it.
For those who don't know, say why.
Well, it's a horror movie. It's a demon possession movie, but the main character is a Christian. The antagonist, the demon, is keeping the Bible from her. The gospel is there. He would never in a million years go to all of these. I won't name any of the other Christian movies, but he wouldn't go to it. I think about that, and I follow Scott Derrickson on Twitter. I love everything he says. And it gets me worked up when Christians get excited about the wrong things. That's what I feel
that's good.
About.
Yeah.
So have we, the church, kind of blown our credibility because we're just like, here's everything all at once?
Or no, you know, in my book, The Way Back, what started the conversation is the huge disconnect between how we see ourselves as Christians and how the rest of the world sees us. For instance, I'll give you an example. The fruit of the Spirit, you know the list, faith, hope, love, gentleness, kindness. All the fruit of the Spirit is essentially what people should think of when they hear the word Christian. You know, and Niels is a Christian guy. Oh, yeah, he's gentle, he's faithful, he's a great guy. But you ask a non-Christian typically what word comes to mind when you think Christian, they're thinking hypocritical, phony, judgmental, power-hungry, jerk. And so there's a huge gap there. So that's where we started. And we started, okay, why is this happening? Is it because of the rise of secularism or radical Islam or the gay community or the ACLU or the Planned Parenthood? We started looking. We went to four big major research companies, Gallup, Pew, Barna, and Lifeway. And we said, let's look at how Christians behave. What do they live their life? Not hard stuff like fasting or mission trips. Just simple stuff. Prayer, tithing, Bible reading, church attendance. So here's what we found out. church attendance. The bar is so low now, if you show up 19 times a year, you're now considered a regular. Yeah. Just 19 times a year, you're a regular now. When it comes to Bible reading, 40% of church-going Christians read the Bible rarely or never. That's almost half of the church-going Christians, not people who claim to be Christians, but guys that show up at church, almost half of them read the Bible rarely or never. Prayer, 63% of Christians think prayer is essential. We thought, okay, that's good, till we realized the flip side. That means 37, more than a third of church-going Christians don't think prayer is essential. And of course, tithing is brutal. Less than 10% of people in the pews actually give 10% of their income. So the bottom line, when you look at that and you realize we become the fat guy in the gym that lectures everybody else about health. You know, that's what we are. You know, it's tough to work out, but it's easy to wear yoga pants. And most Christians now are just sitting around wearing yoga pants. Wow. And so the conclusion of the book is that
Which is a disaster, as we all know. If you just roll that forward, don't work out, only wear yoga pants.
Yes, just wear yoga pants.
That's the track we're on.
Yes. Ooh. But so the bottom line, the greatest threat to Christianity, I think, in America today is not secularism or radical Islam or all those things I mentioned earlier. The greatest threat to American Christianity is American Christians, because we're just not living the life we're called to live. And you mentioned younger people. If you're a millennial or younger, you know, my generation was all about truth. That's why apologetics ministries were so big in my day, Lee Strobel and those kind of guys. Josh McDowell, but now it's about authenticity. They want to see you live it out. They want to see you be real. And so for these guys to see us talk about being a Christian but not living it, they're thinking, why do I want to be like that guy? I have a great example. A friend of mine was on a plane recently. I don't mean to rant here, but a friend was on a plane recently, sat next to a business guy. They started a conversation. They're up in first class. And he got to the point where he said, have you ever considered being a Christian? This business guy said, actually, I have. But I've got two vice presidents that work for me. They're in the back of the plane. He said, they're Christians, but one's cheating on his wife with the secretary. The other gets drunk every weekend. He said, I don't see how they live any different from me. What's the point of me becoming a Christian? And I thought, that's the problem in America. That's the way people look at us. Why do I? You know, and sociologists like Rodney Stark will tell you that the primary reason people convert is because they want to become like you. They want to, maybe it's a family issue or a community they're in. They want to become like those guys. Why would anybody want to become like us? They're never going to consider salvation until they start thinking, you know, changing their perception about who Christians are.
So
pretty brutal.
How do you feel about the celebrity influence in Christianity? As far as, you know, we like hang on to Tim Tebow until hypothetically, until one day something happens. Like, if you put all your eggs in those basket, like, what do you feel like? Because, I mean, celebrity influence is pervasive in every part of culture.
It is. And I think celebrity, that's a human nature thing. I think there's a lot of things that's hard to break simply because people are fascinated with, you know, you walk into an airport and see Johnny Depp or somebody, anybody goes, ooh, that's cool. And so, but it is, it doesn't help us that we get so hung up on Christian celebrities. I've seen a few at the NRB conference here this week, and it's sad to me. And the truth is, most of them are regular guys. They're normal. They don't really crave that, but people do put them on a pedestal. I just don't think it helps. I just really don't think it helps.
Yeah, I'm also curious. I'm gonna go there if y'all are having me on this thing. The last time ever.
It helps our ratings. So
I feel a bit in the 2016 election was insane on all fronts. And this general feel of more of a tribalism in our politics and culture in general. I heard an unnamed famous person last year after the Oscars, so it has to do with Hollywood, railing against liberal Hollywood. Christians need to abandon it, never go back, and make our own Hollywood and do our own movies. That whole, like, what's your response to that?
I rarely a year goes by without a rich business guy coming to Hollywood who's a Christian saying, I'm going to change this industry. Within 9 months, he goes back with his tail between his legs, because the truth is, Hollywood is really good at what they do. I mean, you may not like the movies they make, you don't like the product, but when it comes to making films and distributing films, they're amazing. I mean, they got the machine down. And to think we can just go in and change that, first of all, is idiotic. It just doesn't work. And I'm all for getting into the system. I mean, we're never going to change the system unless we get involved. I mean, I'm looking, I have friends that are at all kinds of levels, presidents of studios, high-level producers, actors, makeup artists, that are dedicated Christians trying to change it from, it's one of the reasons when I hate, when I see Christians criticize Hollywood, I hate it. Because it makes it harder for us who are inside the system trying to make change happen. Because people start looking at us, are you one of those guys? And so, yeah, boycotts, I mean, oh, boycotts, don't get me started. If boycotts worked, why don't missionaries do it? You know, let's go to a third world country, surround a tribe, hold up signs, criticize them until they accept Christ. We're not going to buy anything from you. Yeah. That's going to win them to Jesus, not. And if it doesn't work there, if it doesn't work for missionaries, it's not going to work in Hollywood or the gay community or Target or anybody else. So I think part of my book is the early church astonished people by what they did because they had no power. They had no influence. They had no money. No, they couldn't pass laws. And so all they could do was act. Yeah. And in the book, I show five or six examples of what they did that totally changed the thinking of the Romans. The Romans couldn't figure out, who are these people? Why are they doing this? Yep. They were great things. And historians today say that that shift in thinking is what really caused the fall of the Roman Empire. Sure, there was Vandals coming in, there was Constantine and other things, but it started by the Romans shifting their thinking about who these Christians are and who is this God they serve. It had a huge impact. So a big point of the book is, what are the things we could do? You know, politics hasn't worked. Boycotts hasn't worked. Anger strategies hasn't worked. But what if we decided to go out and astonish this culture? What are the things we could do today that would so astonish this culture, it would force them to rethink who we are and who's this God we serve?
Yeah, I love it.
So it's interesting.
What are... So we have this conversation about, like, when things look and smell and feel Christian,
yeah,
you're already presenting kind of you're a challenge, right, for the unchurched person. So how do you – I love what you said, act. Like, how do we act? How do we be proactive to take that, knowing that you've kind of got this kind of cultural stigma that you got to – it's a cloud that we got to work through?
I'll give you a couple examples. In the book, we give six or eight examples of how you could astonish the culture and then invite readers to come up with their own ways. But one of the things, my co-writer, John Bach, about, I don't know, 6 or 8 years ago, put an ad in the free section of Craigslist a week before Christmas and said, if you're struggling to make Christmas happen for your kids, let me know. I'd like to help. And I bet most people thought he's a pervert or some weirdo, but three single moms answered. And so he and his wife, Kelly, met him at Target, got three grocery carts, went through and said, what do you need? And they got toys, they got clothes, gave him a $100 gift card each for the grocery store. And it transformed their Christmas. I mean, they went from having nothing to the best Christmas of their whole life. So the next year, he got me and my wife. We did it. And more people answered. The next year, we got a few more people. So this past Christmas, we had 15 people all from the entertainment industry, producers, writers, directors, agents, actors. We all showed up at Target, and about that same number of people answered the ad. And we divvied up every person. Everybody got a family. Sometimes it was a single mom, some single dad, others grandparents raising their grandkids. And we took them through Target. And let me tell you, over the years, we've gotten letters and photos. And we don't witness to these ladies, but they all want to know why we're doing this, which opens the door. Yep. In fact, we've done it for a few years now. So Target employees come up and say, look, we know something's up. What's going on with you guys? And it's, you know, are we going to change the world? No. But if every Christian in America did something like that, people would notice. Yep. People would notice. And it's literally transformed these ladies. It's just amazing how the impact it's had. So little things like that. I read a statistic the other day that the vast majority of Americans don't know their neighbor's name. Yep. I mean, how sad is that? If Jay John, an evangelist in the UK, said, you want to be a Christian? Awesome. Go next door. Just start there. Just go next door. But if you just go with an attitude of, you're not there to witness. You're not there to share the four spiritual laws. Just go to serve. Yeah. And people will notice and it'll make an impact.
Yeah, I love that. Well, Phil, I appreciate so much the leadership that you have brought to Christians, to ministries, and to me personally. Thank you for taking the time.
Oh, this is fun.
How can people connect with you online? Where can they get your book?
My blog is philcook.com. I'm Cook with an E, P-H-I-L-C-O-O-K-E. I also, my Twitter and Instagram are at Phil Cook, and you can search for Phil Cook on Facebook. But and whatever I say about social media, totally disregard with my Instagram page because I just have fun. I just really have fun.
It's a favorite in our house, by the way. My kids are always like, what did Phil put up this week?
I have pastors that will send me things, and they'll say, I can't post this because I'm a pastor, but you can. Yeah, they do that all the time. But yeah, it all starts with my blog, and I'd love for people to come and check it out and see what they think.
That's great. Thanks, Phil.